Welcome back to the War at 33 and a Third podcast. I'm Adam Barrow.
I'm Benjamin Richardson.
And today we're going to be discussing the 1977 debut by the American punk, I guess, band Television, Marquee Moon.
So Television came out of the New York scene, specifically out of the CBGB club.
Yeah.
So where many famous artists have come out.
Yeah, so that scene's like really fascinating to read about. I mean, so you had
essentially like all the great American punk artists were coming out of there.
I'll just kind of rattle off a few. The Ramones were probably the biggest to break out of there. You had Patti Smith. You had Television, of course. You had Richard Hell, who used to be Television's bassist before they recorded this album. Blondie, Talking Heads, New York Dolls were pretty huge in that scene, and in like glam rock.
Yeah, like the glam rock precursor basically in America. It's before like, it was like a fad in Britain with like Bowie and T-Rex and.
Yeah, I mean, so that scene is kind of like a conglomerate of a lot of different things, like punk, but also a more arty and like new wave and glam direction. You can really see where, like Blondie, I mean, like most people wouldn't even call them punk.
They would straight up new wave. Yeah, new wave. And sometimes it just kind of sounds like, I'd say Blondie's like the least like punky out of the artists. Sometimes like doesn't even sound new wavy to me.
I guess. and that leads us to this album, which is incredibly hard to classify.
Right. Like, some people call it post-punk. Most call it post-punk. Art punk.
Yeah.
It's usually a common term for it.
I kind of think of it as punk adjacent. You can tell there are
it's
some
punky.
You can tell there are some stylistic similarities.
I honestly think it's just kind of like the vocals.
Yeah, I would say that's where it lies. I'd agree with you. Like that, like a little bit of attitude.
I mean, there's like some punk energy on a couple of the tracks, which we'll get into. But like, I think it's mostly just like that style of like it's like the alternative vocalist.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
I agree. I mean, and you think about like this is probably the perfect representation of like taking punk in a more arty direction, like with the like avant-garde and like jazz elements, like they kind of incorporate here.
So yeah, so supposedly there's like tons of like '60s rock influence and like jazz influence on the guitar playing specifically, like solos, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like the kind of noodly, like intertwining riffs.
that guitar playing, those solos and riffs, two guitars going at pretty much all times here.
Yeah.
That, I think for me, I can't speak for you, but I think many others as well, I think that's the big draw, is the guitar.
Right. And people consistently say, like, Television was like one of the most technical bands, it seems to come out of that scene at least, like as far as like musicianship and like these song structures. I feel like
absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's really consistently impressive on this album. The guitar work,
right, yeah, and just like the musicianship from all of the band members.
Yeah.
I'd say the drumming is like a big draw for me.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the drumming in this album. It kind of blows me away.
There's some really standout bass tracks to me.
All right, yeah, for sure.
Friction and Elevation.
I know what you're talking about. Like between, it seems like the bass part and Elevation, like, seems to like fill the space in between like the guitar riffs. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like it's just so well blended, that song. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So very impressive work here. Like we said, kind of came out of New York punk scene. Hard to call punk. Doesn't really matter. It's great music.
Right.
So, we'll get into the first track of that great music, which is
See No Evil. Right, so like right off the bat, it's like with this like rough guitar tone. And it's like right off the bat, it's like these like, it's always like super repetitive riffs, I feel like. And they just kind of find clever ways to layer two like really simple riffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very different in tone too. Like the first one that comes in that's kind of more simple, the dun dun dun, it's like pretty heavy and crunchy, I guess.
Right, it sounds like overdriven a little bit.
And the second one is like dun 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 dun.
Yeah, it has like a shimmery kind of tone to
it's
me.
It's like it's floating.
Yeah.
I really love that juxtaposition.
It's really easy to like pick out the parts if you listen at all, in my opinion.
I think they might even be playing in different channels.
Oh, in the headphones? Yeah, they could be. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I think it's been a while since I've, like I have a memory of trying to listen to it with one earbud in or something like that.
Oh, and you couldn't, then, you were like, yeah, wait, where's the guitar work?
Yeah. It's like, wait, what's going on here?
It's like, dah, 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 just the whole song. Yeah. Right, just the rhythm.
I mean, this one is probably the prime example for, like, the lyrical content for the rest of the album, which is just, like, kind of just non sequiturs. Like, it's not really anything that substantial, but I don't think it really needs to be.
Right. I don't know. I'd say Marquee Moon, like, that track is, like, pretty thematic.
You think so?
Like. Yeah. Like, I feel like that one just has, like, it's, like, I picture that one almost happening in one night. And I kind of, like, see it, like, that person just wandering around through the night with the full moon.
Yeah.
That's
how
I see that one. Yeah. But other than that, I kind of
touch on
you.
That more later.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah. See No Evil. Super cool.
Right, and a lot of times he's just saying stuff that sounds really good.
Yeah. I love the hook on that, where the, all the backing vocals come in.
Evil! Yeah. And then it goes back into the main
riffs
riff.
Come back, yeah.
Oh, dude, it's always so satisfying in a punk song when you get back to, like, the first riff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
And I've touched on this before.
I think this one's one of the more punky ones, too.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
This more rambunctious. And Friction, which we'll get to, the third track.
Yeah. That's the thing, they're not even that short. Like, those are both 4-minute songs.
Right, I don't think there's a song, like...
There are no short songs.
Like, all the songs are about, like, 4 to 5 minutes on average, I feel like.
Yeah. But anyway, that hook there, Ben knows this. I'm sure I've touched on this at some point, too. But I'm just a sucker for, like, backing harmonies. Like,
background vocals.
I just eat it up. I don't know what it is. It's like when they harmonize on the hook like that. Love it.
Yeah, I don't even see that as just like a cool harmonic moment. I just think it's like cool when they all come in. I don't know.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I don't even know about
you. Just Adam just likes backing vocals.
I do. I'm right. I'm a simple man.
And like we were saying earlier, like the '60s influence. It's like whenever I always kind of associate like backing vocals and like harmonies with like '60s era stuff, Beach Boys and Beatles type things.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah. I love the outro to that track, too, where it's like they keep playing all the riffs, and Verlaine, the lead singer and lead guitarist, just keeps singing, but then they also keep repeating the hook. It's like people saying two different things.
See, you know.
Evil.
Right.
See, you know.
Yeah, I know. They kind of jam out on, like, that part, which they had in earlier.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, cool.
It's cool. Very cool outro.
Right.
So the second track is called Venus. As in the Venus de Milo. Or Venus de Milo, as they mispronounce it here.
Yeah, de Milo or de Milo. It's like, he's not saying it right.
Yeah. That hook is, I don't know. It's great. It's kind of goofy, though.
Right. It's almost like something you'd seen, like, Scott Pilgrim or something. You know, it's like comic book.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
It's like corny a little bit, but I like it. I think it's effective.
It's like, yeah, like the, yeah, I do too. It's like the rest of the band goes... like, did you feel low? And there's like a slight pause. Like, it's offbeat. Like, he doesn't respond when you would expect him to. And
right.
Verlaine goes, nah.
And then they go, huh?
Yeah.
Or like, what? Goes, huh? Or something like that. Yeah.
And then he goes, I fell right into the arms. Venus de Milo.
Right.
It's like a beautiful little guitar piece.
And of course, guitar work ties it together. Is this the song with the bridge? And it's kind of like this, womp, womp. Womp. It's like this kind of like weird synthy effect thing or something. It's definitely, it might be a guitar. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, it's like a pretty, something like that. It's either a synth or really just sort of guitar. Like, or just like with a bunch of pedals.
Right, or I don't know, just getting a crazy tone or something. But yeah, consistently, like we're going to say, probably on like every track, like the guitar work is something to pay attention to. It always is like the riffs are holding it together. It's awesome.
Yeah. Venus is cool. I like Venus. Nice, it's nice melodically as well.
Right. Well, I think like all the songs have a pretty good sense of melody.
Yeah, I agree.
Except for maybe like Friction, which is a little bit more, you know. But even then, I still think it does.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I think Tom Verlaine is like,
I'll do.
His voice is like wiry or whatever, but I think he's a good vocalist. Like, it's effective.
Yeah, it's not
like
a super
dynamics.
Voice.
It has like... Yeah. Interesting, like rhythm variation. It's nice.
Yeah, if you were to hear him sing like a like a ballad or something, you wouldn't think, oh, well, that you would. You would kind of think that guy's voice isn't great. Like, he's not.
Yeah, well, I'd say, like, Guiding Light is kind of like a.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think about that. But, yeah. Not what you would think of as, like, a conventionally great voice. He couldn't go sing, like.
No. I don't know. He wouldn't be an opera singer.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it really fits the music. Like, it's all kind of.
Not a soul singer.
Yeah. Yeah, not a soul singer. Not Marvin Gaye, who we did last episode. Check that out if you haven't.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug here. But yeah, I would agree. I think his voice fits really well. He's pretty expressive. And he has in writing these songs, he has a great sense of melody, and his voice is able to carry him pretty well. So,
right. I think he's just like a good musician, like honestly, yeah. From like the songwriting. And
yeah.
He's a producer as well, co-producer.
Yeah, I mean, we'll touch on that again and again, the musicianship, like especially guitar, but all the instruments. It's really impressive and far beyond what you'd expect from punk rock when you think punk rock.
Right, and since we're talking about it, I heard like this album had tons of, like, they were rehearsing like hours and hours on end before recording. And I heard like, I think Marquee Moon, they just like knocked it out. I think it's like the first take. I think I read that somewhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They were able to do a lot of the songs just first take because they were super. So well rehearsed. Huh.
Like when they got in the studio.
Right. And on their second album, they weren't like, is put together. mm-hmm. It's like this one, they were just like,
yeah, I know Richard Lloyd, the second guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
I know he had some struggles with drug addiction, so that could have
affected his musicianship and his discipline maybe with the rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you can tell like this, like all the songs are like well oiled.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like they're put together, like. It's like most punk songs you could learn in a moment, but these you really couldn't.
Yeah. I think what still gives it a little bit of a raw quality is the way Verlaine produced it, I guess, where he kind of leaves the vocals and the guitar, the two different guitar lines, and the bass and the drums, and the piano when it comes. He kind of leaves everything in its own little like area. He kind of lets everything breathe, kind of gives it like a raw quality, I guess. Like nothing sounds really lush or overproduced at all. Like he kind of lets the instruments like breathe and do their thing. I don't really know many of the technical terms or anything, but
you think it's got like a punk like production style,
I guess. So, but it's not like lo-fi or anything by any means.
No,
yeah,
which is usually associated with like mm-hmm. punk and that sort of thing. Yeah,
I think that also really helps the two separate guitar lines really. Play well every track, that they're really given room to breathe. They're not like
yeah, sure. I mean, the production is nice.
They're not muddying each other.
I guess that's true. I mean, like, they do leave some of, like, the guitar, like, kind of raw in there. You're mm-hmm. right.
Yeah. Yeah. The third track,
Friction.
Friction.
I think this is, like,
Friction.
Yeah.
This one's a rocker.
Yeah, I think this is, like, the most, like, rockabilly on the...
Mm-hmm.
The album, if you will.
Yeah. There's... I love the... what happens? It's like a descending guitar.
Yeah, he's just like walking it down a scale. Dude, yeah. I like the... Like, the rhythm guitar is like... Just like kind of like playing like power chords and big chords in the background while like... The lead is kind of doodling. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I like the main where it's like, bum, dum, bum. It's going between octaves. It's like, bum, dum, bum, dum, bum, dum, ba, da, da. It's kind of like, mm-hmm. it's just kind of got like a goofy, like bouncy flow. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, this one's fun. Like it's.
And this one has like some backing vocals like on the chorus. Like, you're giving me friction, friction.
Yeah. Fun chorus. Yeah. And it's just.
Yeah, I like it.
It's a good time. It's like a big, it's like a.
It sounds kind of epic. Like you're getting hyped up.
Yeah. It's like a big, like you can almost hear a little bit of like big arena rock.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's like the big name alternative rock bands. I mean, that's another thing. Like this album is just super influential. Like big name alternative rock bands. Like Black Keys maybe, like U2, something like that. Like I could definitely hear a little bit of this in their stuff.
Oh wow, yeah.
Where it's like just like big. It's like big, strong, like rockers with a little bit of intricacy to them.
Right. Yeah. Stuff that you could hear at a stadium.
Yeah.
Like commercial.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I mean, this song is powerful. It's like, yeah, especially on that chorus. Like, that sounds like someone, you're right. Wow.
Give him a friction.
Dude, no, I can totally hear that now.
Yeah. It's cool. It's a cool song.
Yeah, I like it. Dude. All
right.
Marquee Men is the fourth track.
We're here. The title track.
That is the longest by far.
Yeah.
So it's like 10 minutes.
It's a 10-minute track. It's their most famous. On Spotify, at least, it has their most plays.
And it's the name of the album.
Name of the album. Title track.
And for good reason, I think.
Yeah. It's,
I think it's by, for to me, I think this is, like, by far my favorite.
Yep. I'm with Ben. It's mind-blowing. It's incredible.
It's incredible. No, like, I feel like when I was listening to this album for the first time, like, after I heard this track, I was like, okay, this is epic. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was like, okay, this album is actually amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and I wasn't halfway through it.
Yeah. So, it begins with, like, one guitar is just playing, like, the same note or two. Like,
da-da-da.
And then the other one's going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
And
so, that like kind of creates, like, a hybrid riff. And that's amazing.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
I got that.
It's like the most, like, two, like, by themselves, they're, like, extraordinarily simple. He's, like, literally, he goes, like, da-da. He's playing, like, three notes there. Mm-hmm. He's, like, just jamming on, like, the same two notes. And the way it just, like, wraps with the other riff is, like, insane.
Like, yeah.
It's so catchy.
That combined riff, which constitutes the main riff of the song, is just, that's phenomenal.
And I guess, like, that's, like, I guess, like, the guitar work is kind of punky on this one, like, how minimal it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I would agree.
But, and it's kind of interesting, because, like, from some of the guitar work, it's, like, it's incredibly simple, but, like, effective, you know?
Yeah.
And at other times, it's incredibly, like, complex.
Yeah. So, that's guitar part one of three on this song that just rocks me. And the second one is when they start playing together, they hit, like, the pre-chorus, I guess.
Oh yeah, like the main like theme on guitar.
Yeah. And then to me it sounds like they're playing together. It might not be. And then there's like piano that plays during that too, like dun dun.
Like following. Dun, dun, dun. Right. No, that melody is awesome. Yeah. And it like perfectly like repeats itself, and then like how it, like the last time it goes somewhere different. Mm-hmm. And the quick cut off.
Yeah. And then it gets hyper. That's super punky.
And then the vocals come back in. Yeah, yes. Yeah, right. Like, the sudden dynamic changes.
See, that happens, like, three times. So, that little bit, we just described that, like, guitar and piano bit. It's like a pre-chorus, I guess. And, right. then it gets, like, legitimately punky. Probably more so than the rest of the album. For, like, a little hook. That only lasts, like, 30 seconds.
All right.
It's a lot of shifts. It's a 10-minute song, but by no means boring. A lot going on.
Right. And after the, like, the chorus every time... Like, what does he say? Like, the first time he says, like, just waiting. And then the second time he's, like, hesitating.
Yes.
And then that has, like, one of my favorite riffs in the whole song after, or the whole album even, like, hesitating. That's, like, I just love that moment. And, like, and then the final time, what does he say? Like, I ain't waiting.
Yeah.
I just love that. It's, like, the development.
That pre-chorus and chorus are... really consistently beautiful.
It's like stuff like that that I feel like makes this one feel like play more like a story to me.
Hmm.
Like it just feels more cohesive. Like I get like I think this is like the most poetic song too. It's just I think the verse about like meeting the man at the tracks. I love that.
What's the line?
He says like, "Listen here, Junior." He's like, "Don't you be so happy, and don't for heaven's so sakes,
yeah,
for heaven's sakes, don't you be so sad."
Yep.
That's like one of my favorite lyrics. I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the big
like
ones
I can just see that like some ruggedy old hobo giving some life advice.
Yeah,
in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I definitely like that lyric a lot too. That one jumps out at me, what in listening,
for sure.
And so you go through that a couple times. It's beautiful, and then you hit the like 4 or 5 minute long guitar solo, and it's
right. I think it's
incredible.
Verlaine. I think it's Verlaine is the one playing this.
That's all I can really say about it. Is that it's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, like
got to be experienced.
If you pay attention to like the drumming, like the rhythm guitar, the bass, like throughout the solo, it's building like very subtly, and there's like increased fills in the drum parts and in the bass parts. Like it really builds like thematically, until it gets to like all the guitars are in unison playing octaves. Bam bam, bam bam.
Yes.
Bam bam, bam bam.
Building up,
and then like the drums are going insane during that part. It just sounds like a breakdown, and then it gets to one of the craziest moments I feel like I've heard it in a rock song. And it sounds like, I don't even know how the guitar players are doing it. It just sounds like a shimmering.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about?
It almost sounds like birds chirping.
For me, at that point, I can just see the bright moon.
Yeah, so that's like the end of the solo. Yeah. And that, to me, that end of it.
It's like so choreographed.
It comes out on the other side, and it's like, it feels like you the song's been reborn.
Right.
It's like it makes the solo feel cathartic, that you come out on the other end, and it's like this almost ambient guitar tones. Like, it's all shimmering and beautiful.
No, I'm a guitarist, and I don't know how they do it. It sounds like they're doing hammer-ons and pull-offs, but I don't know what they're doing to get that sound.
Mm-hmm. It's remarkably impressive.
That part, it's just like, I get lost in the textures.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a beautiful song.
For sure. And when it gets back to like the simple main riff after like that crazy, like, you're just like, wow, these guys can actually play.
Yeah, it goes through the main riff and the
pre-chorus. And you just go back chorus, to the two-note riff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. That really is, like, I promise you, listeners, you just, if you don't check out the rest of the album, check out that one. It's a really, really cool.
And if you don't like that song, you're not going to like this album. Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah. One of the all-time great rock epics, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing I like is that they plop their super long song in the middle. I kind of like when they do that. As opposed to the very last song.
Well, which is still, like, I'd say they put the longest songs at the end of each side, right?
That's true, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I kind of, like, it kind of
close the sides with the long ones.
It being at the end of the first side kind of makes it feel like the rest of the album kind of revolves around it, if that makes sense. And I kind of like when the long song is placed like that. Like, you think about Velvet Underground, White Light, White Heat.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Ray is placed at the very end.
And that's, like, super long.
Yeah, it's, like, close to 20 minutes. It's a whole side. But then you think, like, Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City. Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst is more towards the middle.
Yeah, you're right.
Animal Collective, Sung Tongs. what's it? Visiting Friends? Yeah, Visiting Friends is right smack dab in the middle. And that one's 12 minutes. Book ended by 1 minute song.
Isn't Stairway to Heaven right in the middle of Led Zeppelin 4?
Mm. Yeah, I think so.
I think of that. That was like the rock ballad.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
the rock epic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that came. When did that come out? Early half of the 70s.
Zeppelin 4.
Because they broke up. 71, 72. Formed in like 1970 or 69, and then broke up in 1980.
Hmm.
So it's like either 74, 75. I don't think it's 76. Like,
gotcha. Marquee Moon. Trying to one-up Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah, okay. That's actually an interesting topic. Which one is the better rock anthem?
you're more of a Zeppelin guy than I am. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I don't know, man.
Deflecting. We're deflecting here.
I'm
deflecting as well.
I think... I don't know. I might have to take Marquee Moon, maybe because, like, I feel like Stairway to Heaven is something I've heard, like, way more than that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, too ubiquitous.
It's kind of like a meme within, like, guitar, I feel really? Like. You know what I mean? To know how to play. It's like Freebird. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of like a meme song.
I'll definitely take Marquee Moon over Freebird. I'll go on the record there.
Are you kidding me? It's the best song ever written.
Nothing against Freebird. I like Freebird.
I don't know. Yeah, that's irrelevant though.
Yeah, so that's our first side. Side two opens up with Elevation,
and that's also a highlight of the album.
I like Elevation a lot. Yeah,
I really like that, like the harmonics, and like we were talking about earlier, the bass plays really well with the guitar parts.
The bass gives it like a super ominous feel because it's like the most prominent instrument for most of it. Like the early part of it, bass is the most prominent, and then there's like the guitar, like it's like beeps in and out almost. It sounds like a
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's like call and response between them, sort of. Mm-hmm.
Gives like an eerie feel almost. I like it.
Right, and it's like a spooky, like really legato bass line.
Yeah. And then the hook is like super off kilter. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. Oh, is this the track where after the hook? It's like, I think, is this the one where it's like it lurches and they like skip a beat?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I love it. And it's like completely not in time, but like they rehearsed it to be not in time.
Exactly,
and like skip a beat. And it's like the exact same every time through. It's, mm-hmm. it's kind of impressive.
Yeah. I like when I very first listened to this, I was like,
That's what's the line? It's like, elevation, don't go to my head. And it, like, yeah. The chord comes out of nowhere.
yeah, exactly. And then it, like, it's like just mashing the chord, and then it plays like a, and it sounds like super sweet.
Right, I guess.
And then they do it again, and it's all just super off kilter and imbalanced. It sounds very cool.
Yeah.
That's probably the part that grew on me the most. It's like, wow, like, this part of Elevation is sick.
Oh, like the chorus right there?
Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah, and like you said, I mean, since they're so incredibly, like, choreographed and rehearsed, it's like, wow.
Right. It sounds put together.
Makes it seem like a more, like, a bold artistic choice rather than a flub.
Right. Right, exactly. It's like, it's done well. Like, sometimes...
Yeah, exactly.
And that was my complaint during the Pavement review, is that, like, some of the parts, like, it's like, was that supposed to sound like that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you definitely don't get the impression here that these guys are amateur musicians.
And now we're talking about Pavement, and I'm thinking about it.
I just thought the same thing. You think there's some television influence on Pavement?
Maybe, like, in the way, like, the guitarists, like, interact with each other, and how they both kind of, like, have interchanging roles, like, where one will do rhythm, and then one will switch into the lead, and then one will...
Yeah.
Maybe, like, that kind of, like... ambiguous role of the guitarist.
Yeah,
because Tom Verlaine's the lead, but I mean, there's plenty of riffs from
Lloyd. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they touched a lot of it. I was thinking about this, like, saying this more towards the end, but the Strokes, especially their debut, to me, that sounds a lot like Television. It's like popular Television.
So, like, do you prescribe that, like, to the theory that, or not even the theory, the opinion that the Strokes debut is a, like, post-punk revitalism?
I mean, I guess, yeah. Kind of came.
Because, like, when I think of that way. Have you ever listened to Interpol's, like, The Bright Lights?
Oh, yeah. I love that album.
That one, like, literally takes, like, the dun-dun, dun-dun rhythm. Like, and uses it in, like, 3 songs. I'm not even kidding.
Really? Yeah.
And so, like, for me, like, that was, like, the most direct, like, influence I've seen. Like, they literally, like, took some of the guitar parts from this and put them in there.
Interpol's also accused a lot of kind of Jack and Joy Division a little bit.
Oh, really? With their later stuff, or?
That first one, too.
Oh, really? Because, like, the sparse and the way, like, the drum sound and stuff?
Yeah.
And do you prescribe
to
that?
I think more the vocal delivery as well.
The dude sounds
a lot like Ian Curtis.
You think so?
He tries to, at least. Like, the same kind of, like deep-throated, impassionate, like, not super,
I'm Ian Curtis.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that.
Heart and soul.
yeah, he tries something like that.
Do you think so? I'd have to listen to it again
and think about it. I love both, though.
Oh, Joy Division and Interpol?
Yeah.
That first album really is cool.
I haven't listened to anything
aside from that. A friend put me onto that. I like Joy Division as a pretty good bit.
Absolutely. Dude, the band from The Shirt, dude.
The Shirt band.
Yeah.
I guess Interpol is also, like, or not Interpol, Joy Division is in that, like, post-punk camp.
And then I guess
their debut came out the same year as Television's.
Around then, yeah.
I thought it was 77, right?
Joy Division? Let's give that a Google. Joy Division debut.
Let's see what Google has to tell us.
What's their first album called? I'm forgetting. Drawing a blank. Unknown Pleasures.
Dude, me too. I was like, wait.
Yeah.
It's just the one with the album cover, man.
I remember Closer. Yeah.
Closer. Yeah, okay.
Unknown Pleasures, 1979. So, yeah, that's the thing. Like, Television sounds a lot like if they had made this album any later, it'd be really easy to lump them in with a lot of post-punk, especially what's coming out of England. But it came out in 77. Like, I think this may have come out before...
Right, and you were telling me that...
Like, before the Sex Pistols even released their debut in England.
So, oh, this came out before the Sex Pistols debut?
It's the same year.
Right.
I don't know the months, but...
Because a lot of people attribute, like, punk to being solely, like, the Sex Pistols, like, doing. I feel like...
Yeah, because, I don't know. Like, I think this is a really good case study that what was coming out of America, especially in New York, was really different from what was coming out of England.
Right. How would you characterize the differences? Like, you said that this is more artsy, you said?
That's the direction I would go. I mean, you think about, like Talking Heads' first album and Blondie's early stuff. I mean, it's like it sounds a lot like what New Wave ended up being. The Ramones were probably the most, like, straightforward, which you would think of as, like, punk rock. And it's kind of ironic that they were the, like, least arty in that scene, probably, and they were the ones that made it the biggest.
Or is that, like...
Reminds me bigger than Talking Heads. Would you?
Yeah.
You think so?
I mean, at least at the time, I know. I think they were.
Yeah.
And I think of like the other like Forerunners, like the Clash and stuff.
Yeah.
And the Buzzcocks, and it's all kind of like a lot more rocky than I'd say like.
Yeah. And much more simple.
And would you say that, like, the artier punk, and, like, post-punk stuff, like, that did you think that's received, like, way less commercial success, I feel like, mm-hmm. maybe at first?
Yeah.
Of course, now it's critically acclaimed, obviously, but...
Yeah. Not as broad as an appeal. I mean...
Right, because yeah. it's more experimental, in a way.
Yeah.
Like it's experimental rock.
This album is super popular, but it's not... I don't think it really sold, you know? Let's see.
All right.
It didn't even chart in America.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, it makes sense to me, though, that, like, that makes sense if you think about it like that.
I don't know. Anyway. Track 6, Guiding Light. Guiding Light's good. Like, we touched upon this earlier. It's a little bit of a ballad, even.
Right. And I think it's, like, really pretty.
Yeah, it's a relatively pretty and sweet melody.
Yeah, I think like the singing is like this is like the most melodic it gets.
Guiding light. It incorporates piano, I'd say. Piano is kind of sprinkled in at various points in the song.
Yeah, I think it's this track and
Torn Curtain.
Torn Curtain are the only ones that have piano in it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
Marquee Moon has piano in that little bit.
Yeah, yeah, in that one little section. Yeah, you're right.
Venus might have a touch. Anyway.
That's true.
Yeah,
does
I'm probably misremembering that. I don't think it does.
Okay, anyway, whatever.
But yeah, Guiding Light, very pretty. Piano is like really like sprinkled in. Mm-hmm. It's like relatively, I don't know, like kind of high notes, I guess. Like it's not super like dark.
Right.
It's like sounds twinkling, which reminds me of a star. Which of course, a star is a guiding light. So I make that connection when I think about this song.
I think there's a part in this where, like, the cymbals are kind of like, there's, like, tons of cymbal fills, and it's, like on the cymbals, and it gets, like, really gorgeous, like, with all the, do you know what part I'm talking about? I think it's, like, might be, like, a bridge in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, I think it's, like, one of the most beautiful moments in the album, aside from, like, the shimmering part that we talked about in Marquee Moon.
The post-solo breakthrough.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I would describe this as, like, shimmering, twinkly.
I love a solo here, too. I'd say that's pretty epic as well. Like it's kind of like wailing with the piano playing. Like the piano kind of picks up at this point.
I'm trying to remember it. Right, dude. I remember one of the solos. I can't remember if it's this track. It might be like one of. It kind of struck me as like the most classic rock sounding solo on the album.
See, I think this probably my.
That might be the one I'm thinking about.
You think this might be the most classic rock sounding song to me? With the piano elements?
Yeah, it just sounds like just a power ballad.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think it's done very well. I like Guiding Light a lot.
Oh, yeah. I like all the tracks a lot.
Yeah.
After that is Prove It, which is the 7th track.
Prove It. Tis a fact.
Tis a fact.
That one's fun lyrically. I like Prove It. Yeah, that is kind of like
Prove It.
That one's really bouncy with the bass and drums, and like the general rhythm of the guitar.
Right. I feel like this kind of has like the same like sense of humor. I don't know, like sense of wit is like Venus does to me.
Mm-hmm.
Prove It. That reminds me of the other moment where they're like, "What?"
Yeah, absolutely.
It kind of has like the same aesthetic for me. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
There's a soft pause there too.
That's what I mean. Like the vocal delivery kind of is reminiscent of that for me. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah. That one's fun. The guitar is kind of distinct on that one too.
Like dude. Oh yeah,
it like almost sounds like they're playing. Sounds like they're playing the very bottom of it almost. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he's kind of getting like a rake effect, and then and the intro I think is gorgeous, where it's like and the other guitar is like playing descending like harmonics that just kind of like bleed into the next one.
Yeah. And that one ends. What does he say at the end? This case is closed.
Oh, and then it's like
the music cuts. Yeah, this case is closed.
Yeah, like prove it. I don't.
Yeah. it's like I think he mentions like detective stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of got that vibe to it. It's like prove your evidence or whatever.
Yeah, prove it. Prove it. Where's the evidence? And then we go from
the facts.
We go from that bundle of fun to this bundle of of tears, literally tears, because I say tears over tears, and over. Torn tears, torn curtains,
holding back the
tears. Like, it says like holding back the tears, rolling by like years, and it's like just super,
it's so dramatic. Yeah, this one's like for me is like the way, and even like the drums, like they just have like it's very like grand and thematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I like it all right. I'll go ahead and say this is my least favorite song.
I might agree. I think it's a little like repetitive.
On. Yeah, drags on a little bit.
I don't think it needed to be 7 minutes.
Yeah, it's just a super gloomy note to end an album that otherwise isn't really gloomy or particularly angsty. Super gloomy note to end it on.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel now that you're saying that.
It's a good song. Fits a little questionable.
So, like, what would you put to close it? Like, where would you think this would fit better?
I don't know. I mean, if you're gonna put a super gloomy song anywhere and not have the rest of it be like that, like I wouldn't prefer you did that. But if you were to do that, I'd prefer you put it at the end like they did.
Right. Right. Yeah. I guess it's like, I know what you're saying.
Like, I don't want my opener to be this like dark. Yeah.
Right. You're just like setting the mood, and then it's like the rest of the album is kind of different. Yeah, but I guess you're right. I guess like aesthetically, this one seems like a little bit out of place, maybe.
A touch. Yeah. Because again, not a bad song.
Because it is like it's like very dramatic. It's just like he's like mourning. He's like, I'm holding back the tears, the torn curtain.
Torn. I do kind of like that one's a touch. Post-punky to me. Like, that... This one is probably the one that sounds the most, like, conventional post-punk. Like, the... Like
in which ways?
Like, the bass is pretty big. It's kind of, like, dark in tone, I guess.
Maybe, like, a little gothic rock.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, probably more so that.
Well, I mean, but, you know, like, they're kind of interchangeable a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I guess... I think gothic rock is a sub-genre of post-punk, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
Or an offshoot or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Yeah. Decent note to end the album on.
Right. Could have been stronger. I guess they wanted to put something like that thematic like at the end. Like, because now that I'm thinking about it, and I don't know where else to put that, really.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't make sense. I don't think it would make sense anywhere else.
Yeah. I don't know. On the whole, the second half is not as good as the first. I mean,
I'd say it's hard, because it's worn curtain.
Hard to be as good as the side with Marquee Moon, though.
Right, like, I think whatever side had Marquee Moon would probably be my more favorite side, just because that song is incredible. Yeah,
and See No Evil, for that matter. That's probably my second favorite.
I think for me, it's... I think, like, Prove It or Elevation are, like, my favorite aside from Marquee Moon.
The off-kilter ones.
But, I mean, like, other than Torn Curtain, I think I'm, like, I love, like, all these tracks.
Yeah, I still like Torn Curtain.
It's not a bad song at all. It's just the other ones are like great.
Yeah.
Like amazing. Yeah.
It really is a strong album. Really is.
For sure. I mean, like, for me, this is like, I don't know if I want to say like maybe like a top 20 album for me.
Really?
Yeah. I just think it's great. I really like it. It grew on me a lot. The first time I heard it, I just grew to love it. Like a lot.
I've grown more impressed with the second half. Like
Right.
Like I first heard this a long time ago. Maybe not that long ago. Anyway, kind of besides the point. I didn't like the back half as much. I still think it's not quite as good, but I didn't really like it that much at all, to be honest. Like, I kind of thought Elevation through Torn Curtain was a little boring, but I definitely don't think it's a little boring now.
No, I love Elevation and Prove It. Those are, like, highlights for me, honestly. But the first half is extremely strong, I feel like.
Yeah.
And maybe you like the rockabilly cuts. Like,
See No Evil and Friction are probably the biggest rockers.
I feel like the first half is like more punky, sort of.
Yeah.
And you may disagree because you know you said like the last one's like gothic rocky or whatever.
A little bit.
And I can totally see that actually.
Hmm.
Like that makes sense. Ahead of the curve, I guess.
Ahead of the curve. Definitely the big theme here for Television.
Right.
Fantastic album. Definitely recommend you guys check this one out.
For sure. 10 out of 10.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Peace out.